is Nicole Whitney.
Welcome to Eyes Wide Open. We are multifaceted beings living in a multidimensional existence, and we hold the power of perception. This power alone paints our reality. Perception influences the things we see and the things we don't see. Together, we'll explore the mystical and the material, the metaphysical and the physical, the supernatural and the concrete, and the seen and the unseen. Hi, I'm your host, Janessa Finley Ford. I'm an empowerment coach who guides clients in transmuting their trials into triumph through emotional processing, mindset mastery, and spiritual clarity so they come to know and believe they are unstoppable. I am so excited to welcome our guest in today. Tracy and I met a few years ago in a training, and I adore and love Tracy. I cannot say enough good things about her, and it is the most genuine thing when I tell you that I light up when I see her name notifications show up on my phone, because I know that I am in for a thought-provoking, mind-altering conversation. She makes me think, she expands me, she grows me, and I know she's going to do the same for you here today. So let me introduce to you Tracy Cardello, who's a holistic therapist in New York and New Jersey. Excuse me. Tracy got her start in the mental health field at the age of 19, working at a halfway house for chronically ill adults, and she credits this experience as the single best education of her career. It allowed her to casually interact with clients from a variety of backgrounds and learn how trauma affects the development of mental illness. After grad school, she worked in psychiatric hospitals and eating disorder treatment programs. She started her private practice in 2000. She's got so much experience. It's so exciting. And went on to study psychoanalytical psychotherapy and EMDR. She's also an experienced client and has tried every single modality she has ever decided to train in. Her personal experiences led her to question the efficacy and overuse of pharmaceuticals for the treatment of depression and anxiety. She went on to study and become a proponent of natural alternatives to medication. In 2014, she discovered energy psychology and has been an advocate of the mind-body connection and holistic treatment methods ever since. She supports clients' right to self-determination and informed consent and specializes in trauma-informed therapy, eating disorders, and self-empowerment. Tracy lives in New Jersey with her life partner and two cats, Jedi and Moose. Tracy, thank you so much for being here and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. I am so flattered by all the kind words, and I reflect that right back to you. It's always so exciting to be able to talk to you and share ideas and bounce stuff around and expand. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Absolutely. So I hear there's some jokes in your world, and you have a funny story for us all to get to know you a little bit better and see the lighter side as we dive into some more serious topics here today. So I can't wait to hear this. What you got for us?
Story. And I hope that we're going to be able to tie it back to what we're going to talk about later on. So this is a story about getting lost and then kind of finding yourself again. So a few years ago, I am out hiking, and it just happened to be the day after we turned the clocks back in the fall. So I'm out hiking in the woods in upstate New York, and I'm angry. So I'm like moving at a good clip. And I realized that, like, even though I'm on this path, I am not coming back to my car. So I, of course, think I'm on a loop, and I'm on a marked trail. So now I realize that it's starting to get dark. I've been out here for like two and a half hours, and I do not have time to double back. So I have to call 911. And I mean, this is a while ago. So I'm like on my BlackBerry calling 911. So I call 911 and they patch me through to the head of park services, and I tell them where I am. And I'm like at this lake, right? I'm at this lake. I'm on this particular trail. I parked at a lake. this is not the same lake, right? So they're like, all right, we're going to blow an air horn. You tell us where it's coming from. So I tell them, and they're like, you're not even close to where we thought you are. Hold tight. Don't move. We're going to send somebody out there. We'll be out there in like a half an hour. So I do. Meanwhile, I was really well prepared for this hike. So I could have stayed there if I had to, but it would have been uncomfortable and probably kind of scary. So within about a half hour, 45 minutes, it's getting dark. They finally send somebody back to me. They pick me up and they drive me very far. So I learned two very important messages, right? Not every marked trail is a loop, right? I thought I was on a loop and I was just going to end up back where I started. And just because you're lost doesn't mean that you're not on a marked trail and can't find your way back. So there's always somebody to help you. And so this is kind of a funny story to me. People who hear it are like, oh my God, you went hiking by yourself. But I highly recommend sometimes you just have to get lost by yourself and try to find your way back. So that's my little story.
I love this. I love what you do for work and the loop aspect, right? Because we get caught in loops, these patterns, and we're going to talk about more of that with the victimization in a little bit. But everything we focus on is how we can interrupt patterns and loops for people so they can step forward on their journey where they want to be going. And I'm sure there's a lot of lessons, but empowerment in the fact that you weren't on a loop even though you expected to be.
Right. You feel so much more comfortable to think that you're on a loop and you're just going to come back. And I think even in life, right, it feels comfortable. Even if you don't like the loop that you're on, you're so used to it that it's hard to break from it. And there's often not a lot of support for breaking out of that pathway and doing something different because, you know, even if it's not scary for you, which it usually is, it's scary for other people to let you out of, you know, your zone and let them out of their comfort zone because it really rocks relationships.
For sure. It has that ripple effect upon everyone. And for some reason, in our fixed, inflexible thinking, we think that change is going to be bad. If someone shifts, it's going to be a detriment when more often than not, when growth is involved and others shift, the ripple effect is positive for everybody.
Right. One way or another, there's going to be growth attained from it.
Yes. So share with us a little bit about, you know, we heard in the introduction some of your path from the standardized mental health system into a more holistic approach. Elaborate a little bit more on, you know, whatever you feel comfortable sharing as the biggest influences that nudged you out of what was standardized. And, you know, my experience in my education, just really briefly, somewhat similar to yours, I knew when I finished college, I was going to have to work an internship and most of them were unpaid. And that seemed like not a great plan for survival of my needs. And so I diverted course and decided I would pursue criminal justice instead. And my eating disorder was part of that decision too, if I'm being fully honest, because I felt very duplicitous thinking I would be helping other people with their addictions while I was really active in my own. But there's just so many things within that standardized system. When you go through standardized education, it pushes you one into the other. And my journey outside of the standardized system was very much my own healing and not getting results. So I think we share a lot of the very same viewpoints with slightly different paths getting there, but I'd love to hear more of your own story.
I think it started before that, right? Because I started as a client as a kid, right? Like, I mean, you know, you're sort of the identified patient in your family and you're the one who ends up in therapy. I was the one who ended up in therapy and, you know, definitely should have been other people or everyone. Right. But I think that being a client, you know, definitely made me want to help people and definitely pushed me into a path where, you know, the system itself, like even the educational system, doesn't really advocate for you to get a job, right? They advocate for you to help other people. And so they're sort of setting up that, like, that rescuer dynamic right from the start. So you're going to pay a lot of money for an education. You are going to pay to do an internship that's going to be unpaid, right? And that's part of your curriculum. And then you're just expected to sort of go out into, like, really, really low-paying jobs with high caseloads and, you know, the burden of some really chronically ill clients. And you're not prepared. And, you know, the other funny thing I think about mental health is that they don't advocate that their therapist should have gone through mental health treatment, right? So even though I always was, it was not until my psychoanalytic program that they required actually 3 times as many therapy hours as clinical hours and supervision. So I thought that was really interesting, right? Because in their opinion, it was 3 times more important to make sure that you got your own stuff under control and that you learned how to be a therapist by being a client. And so I have sort of taken that with me, you know, and that's kind of translated into so many of the things that have guided the direction of my path, my career, my belief system, you know, because it wasn't until an experience of being on medication for a very long time and kind of like wondering, well, what's the path out of here? You know, like everything's kind of still the same. Like things have calmed down, but nothing's really changed and nobody's offering me a path out of here. And when I ask about it, I really get sort of marginalized and pushed to the side. And so I started doing my own research even about medication. And that was really the first time that I was like, you know, super rebellious and really thought like, there's something wrong with this system. There's something wrong with the idea that I'm never going to be okay without this medication. And truthfully, my life is in a completely different place. So how can that be true? And like, if, you know, if we want to start from the position that mental health treatment, therapy in general helps you to change yourself, then why are we kind of coming back to the position that you can never change this? You can never outwit your biology. And I, you know, there's a lot of admission recently that even that research was deeply flawed and probably untrue from the very start, right? And so, you know, coming from the position that people can change and that sometimes it's not in their best interest to change, or the reasons that they sabotage themselves are because the idea of change is so scary and it's going to upset the system. Rather than, you know, this is something that's intrinsically wrong with you and that you will have to use medication to help you supplement for your entire life. So I couldn't really believe that premise. And when I started testing it out, it just didn't hold water, right? So after a very long time, after about 10 years, I had to wean myself off of antidepressants. And that was like a journey that I couldn't even imagine. No, there was no professional to help me with it. Everyone said, you know, this is not addictive. And yet if it's not addictive, why do I need 3 times more of it than I needed 5 years ago? Why does my dose go up and up and up every year? And why am I having such a hard time getting off it? You know, and so what I've come to understand is that a lot of the, you know, the symptoms that people suffer from when they're coming off medication are not because they're depressed and their body misses that medication. It's actually a rebound depression that's caused by the medication and by withdrawal itself. So I try to, and people generally find me who are like looking for something different, or at least want to be supported in like exploring the path that maybe there is an alternative to medication. That's how I found energy psychology. I mean, it was like, I really couldn't have planned the path that it was going to take. It just sort of pulled me along. So that's a really long answer, really long way of getting to that. But
no, it's all perfect. I love hearing about that. There's several things, like I want to dive more into the comment about how really the professional education and training even pulls you into the role of victim, which we're going to get into that dynamic in a little while. I also love the topic, especially for this show, of how it's not the absence of pharmaceuticals that dictate our wellness. Like, we don't, I feel like it's also easier to grasp that from a physical standpoint. So for me, it was antibiotics. I kept taking antibiotics because I had chronic bronchitis, and I never truly got well. And my bronchitis was not a result of the absence of pharmaceuticals. Even with pharmaceuticals, I wasn't maintaining long-term healing. And I think there's a difference between the stigma, at least with mental health and physical ailments, that, oh, maybe our lifestyle or some alternative treatments can really help at the physical level. But when you're playing in the mental realm, that's different, and that can't be overcome at the same outcome, successful outcome, if you will. And so, and then I think there's a whole nother level of people who say that they can guide people to that level of success, are it's dangerous, you know, like, I think there's a lot of stigmas and preconceptions about that. And I really feel as though, as you mentioned, all of the little breadcrumbs that led you along your path, right? If we're following our path and the breadcrumbs, we're going to be led to what we need for ourselves, which is the same with my personal story too. So thank you for sharing so much about your own experience. So Tracy really is so knowledgeable and powerful in the world of this victim mindset triad. And I'm going to let her help walk us through wrapping our minds around it, because I played a victim, especially with my eating disorder. There's a huge aspect that I had to overcome the addiction. And I know this is seen broadly in addiction, but we see it broadly in our practices in general because it's so ingrained in society. And I could go on about my reasons, but I'll save space for you to contribute what you think the deepest root causes are for this mindset to be so pervasive in general across the board. And I've also found through my own personal journey, it's something that we constantly come back to. We may step out of the victim in one aspect of our life. Perhaps that's professional, or perhaps it's with a friend, or perhaps it's with a family member, or perhaps it's with a significant other, but then we still have victim-esque tendencies when the next traumatic or big event happens and we instantly go into, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening to me, how unfair, yada, yada, and we have to process through the trauma to come out the other side and say, wow, that actually was happening for me. And anyway, you know, it's this process. So please start us out with explaining the, what I just referred to as the victim triad. And I don't know that those are the proper words. So tell us more.
I want to give credit where credit's due, because I learned about this information from Dr. Kelly Brogan, and she talks about it. And I read the book Beyond Victim Consciousness by Lynn Forrest. And this is also based on the drama triangle by Stephen Cartman, who is a transactional analyst. So this comes from there. I think when we're, it's so easy, right? And there's so much secondary gain from sitting in that realm of victim, right? Because somebody's coming to save you. It's not your fault. It's whatever it is, right? It's your family, it's your biology, it's the government, it's, you know, this period of time, it's the party that you don't like. It can be really small or really, really broad. But it sort of allows you to feel injured and makes your feelings other people's responsibility. So I think, you know, stepping out of that, one of the biggest things to think, you know, to sort of watch for is like, where am I looking for other people to be responsible for making me okay? And it's that observer consciousness, like, where am I contributing to this idea that people are out to get me, or that I need somebody or something to rescue me? And, you know, I mean, we're talking about medication that can easily be used for medication, right? I'm kind of fond of saying, like, they have never found a person who has a true Prozac deficiency, right? Like, it just doesn't exist. Nor have they ever come up with a blood test. Like, no simple test. Say, yeah, you're depressed. It's all self-report. And, you know, so there's nothing, we don't rely on anything biological, and you and me might to an extent, right? Because, you know, with clients, I use muscle testing. And so if clients, for example, are on medication, I can help them determine if this medication is helpful and what their body wants to be their sort of ideal dosage of it. And a lot of times it's not helpful, right? And sometimes it's even hurting them, and then that can sort of help us. So, you know, part of the work that we do allows people to sort of tap into that part of them that really does know best so that they can learn to trust themselves, because a lot of what we accept in mental health treatment has been other people telling us you're this, you're that, and putting labels on us that are not necessarily in our best interest, right? So people collect, like, you know, a half a dozen labels and end up on several different medications. And sometimes they're on, you know, medications to counterbalance some of the side effects of the first medication. So this also sort of allows people to stay in that victim mode, allows them to deny their own aggression, right? Like, you hear people say a lot, like, you know, I'm not angry. I don't get angry. You know, I love everyone. You know, if anything, I'm only angry at myself, right? And so, of course, we know that, like, if you're angry at yourself, you're just bound to. It's impossible not to project it outward. And, you know, the way you project it outward can be very personal, right? Like, that's going to vary from person to person. But you're not holding on to, there's no getting rid of that anger. It's definitely going to come out somewhere. Control top pantyhose, right? Like, you just can't hold your breath for that long. You could try pushing it down, but it's definitely going to pop out. See, I've got some notes here, so I'm trying to go off that. It's also, so being the victim allows you to either consciously or unconsciously manipulate the situation in order to get your needs met, right? So in order to get taken care of, you are not trying to work your way out of that, right? And so, you know, whether it's overt or covert, right, you are going to try to get your needs met however you're most accustomed to getting them met. And if that means that you've had a rescuer in your life that takes care of you, that can really keep you stuck, right? Like, we talk about secondary gains all the time, right? What's the secondary gain for staying sick? Or for staying small, or, you know, even for staying, you know, in a financial place that you don't prefer to be, right? How are you contributing? What thought process of yours is contributing to that, right? And is any of this, like, do you have questions about any of this? I know I'm talking really fast.
I just had such a profound light bulb moment when you were talking about looking for someone else to meet your needs. Like, the simplest way to connect in and identify with yourself in action in this pattern simply comes from starting with asking yourself the question, can I meet my own needs? Can I meet my own emotional needs? Are you looking for someone outside of you? Do you believe that you have that within you, or the connection to source to create that? And if the answer is no, then you know that you're showing up as a victim somewhere, because you're looking outside of yourself to have someone else do it for you. That's so simple, so tangible, and so brilliant. So thank you for sharing that with us. I just have worked with so many people. If you ask them, you know, what their needs are, and it's not okay for them to have needs, maybe because they weren't allowed that space as children, or so frequently working with individuals that experienced abuse or neglect in their younger years, they won't even acknowledge that they have a need. Like, what's the need? I don't have needs. I don't have emotional needs. I'm needless. Like, there are no needs here. Like, all of us as humans have a right to have needs, and we do have needs. And so also, if your answer to that question is simply, I don't have needs, My friends, there's some room for healing.
Definitely. Time to take a closer look at that. And that's so in the rescuer mindset, right? Like the rescuer mindset that just completely overlooks or devalues their own needs. And they take up the cause, a lot of times they take up the cause of taking care of the victim, right? And taking care of somebody who can't take care of themselves. And of course, I mean, that's so disempowering because in some regard, right, the rescuer doesn't want you to get better because then they're out of a job, right? So you can see how everyone might have a position where they sort of center, but people definitely, they definitely go through all three of these positions, right? And the last on the triad is the villain or the perpetrator. And, you know, you can see that in really broad context, right? Like, you know, in society, you might see that in your own family. And, you know, if you're open to it, you might see how it shows up in your life and how you perpetrate on other people. Even if it's just perpetrating on them, again, coming back to that, to try to get your needs met, right? And so it's people might not recognize that they have needs, but their unconscious needs are definitely trying to get met in ways that are sometimes a lot more covert, right? It's not right out there in the open. And so you'll, right, sometimes meet very depressed people who have completely foregone their needs, but they're not contributing, right? Like they're not seeing themselves as fully functioning people and they're not contributing. And they need a lot of empowerment to get back to where they want to go, right? So it's like unpopular position, right, to take to ask someone to see, like, how are you showing up this way in your life? What are some of the ways that you're acting all of these things out, right? And sometimes people are much more comfortable admitting to one position than they are to admitting to the others. But we're all of them.
Absolutely. I can remember waking up to my villain aspect. I was pretty comfortable in the victim role. And like sarcastic, snarky Janessa, cynical Janessa, she would come out here and there. And I didn't connect with it as being a villain so much until I got further along in my personal development journey. But when I really connected in with my villain, I was justifying it through victim mindset of saying, oh, well, this and this happened to me first. And so if you do this to me enough times, then I'm going to essentially bite back, I'm air quoting for the sake of, you know, conceptualization. But essentially putting it on the other person still, like you've asked for it, heaven forbid I just have a boundary, but hey, this behavior isn't okay. And there's no space for it here. I'm not available for that. And you can make a choice of how you want to respond. And if that's stepping out of my life, so be it. It's very empowering to get to that point where you have a boundary, but until you have a boundary, you're going to continue to ping pong around in these three aspects, being powerless, being the victim, giving your, you know, really energy away, hoping and praying someone else is going to make things better. And it's also so interesting as you talk as well, reflecting on last year and some of the people who came to the rescue and then met our boundaries because, you know, we're finding our way through it. And those boundaries were really uncomfortable for them because they were really into that rescuer role. So yeah, the more you learn about this, the more you're going to see it show up in your life because it's all around us. So share with us, what do you think that some of the top contributing influencers are to creating this, you know, victim mindset that we all have to work through and grow through to transcend?
Just want to make the point, right, that boundaries, you brought up boundaries, and I think that is really the key to all of this, right, is having good boundaries, knowing how to install them, and, right, like always coming back to that, as your fallback position, right? Because that is something that then can't be penetrated. It's not up for discussion. So I think it starts in a lot of different ways. I mean, if we're, you know, kind of talking about like the mental health system, right, in general, it starts in the education system, right? Like by people who feel like they're supposed to be rescuers, like, you know, they feel bad if they are not rescuing or not, you know, money is a good way of seeing this, right? So people who have sort of been convinced that they are somehow less virtuous if they're getting money for what they do, right? So mental health workers are like usually remarkably low paid, right? Like for any other profession, right? Because they're sort of brainwashed from very early on that, like, you know, you're fighting the good fight and you're supposed to be helping people, and how can you take their money if you're supposed to be helping them, right? So it starts there, and I think it cultivates there, right? And then, you know, people are sort of bombarded by social media, you know, which, you know, has a lot of really good aspects, right? Teaches people to advocate for themselves and help really educate them about things that might otherwise have such a strong stigma that they wouldn't recognize it, right? So it's good for self-help and really good for education. But, you know, is there a twinge of, you know, you can't help it because this is how you are, you can't help it because of your trauma, you can't help it because of, you know, any number of different factors. Anytime you're getting that message, that's something I would steer clear of, right? And then, you know, the influence of the medical community, right? Like insurance companies and, you know, the medical, just the overall medical model in mental health treatment, right? That somehow, like, you have to have a diagnosis for you to be eligible for treatment, right? So you start out with an illness, right? And now we're going to sort of help you out of that illness. And, you know, I think once you slap a label on people, it's much harder for them to get help because now they've got a justification, right? They've got a reason why this is all normal. And without this, you can't get what you need. So you're like, you're in this double bind just by accepting help. You can accept this help, but it also means that you're now stuck in the system. Say a lot about that.
Yeah, the word label, definitely, that was exactly what was in my head. And then the next sentence that came out, it's so counterintuitive for us to use labels so heavily within our society, yet we do. They're everywhere. Everybody gets a label. Everyone needs a label. We're unique and special, so we need separate labels for all the things. When at the core of humanity is the desire for connection and unity, separate and segregate ourselves through labels, and then hope and pray that through our separation, we can have that connection and unity with other people. I have done past shows about the insurance and healthcare, like there's a whole lot there. If you guys listening haven't heard this and that speaks to your soul, please go back, check out those episodes. I'm going to cap my rant on that topic for here for today because there are other episodes to dig into with that. And typically I don't speak about topics I haven't researched well. So as I dive into my two cents on the savior-victim complex, I am just going to caveat this with the fact that I don't know off the top of my head if the source I'm dropping is correct, but I believe it was Greg Braden who somewhat recently came out with information and research that has been done that shows our DNA was altered some time ago, and I don't know the specific time frame, to where in our DNA, at our DNA level, we are looking for a savior. We believe that there is something that is needed outside and external of us to make us whole, complete, what fill in the blank word, maybe when you go internal, you feel like you're searching for so many years, I felt like I was broken. And it took this whole personal development and healing journey to get to a place where I know I'm whole and complete, but I didn't start life that way. And we see when talking about Savior, we see this so ingrained within many religious practices. So having been raised within the Catholic Church, that definitely reinforced this idea that there's something outside of me that, I mean, there's things within the Catholic Church that you're supposed to literally respond and speak the words. And I spoke the words for 20 plus years of my life, I am not worthy. And so you grow up reciting this ingrained belief, because words have power, words have energy, and you're integrating that into yourself, into your unconscious, I am not worthy. And then you believe that something outside of you needs to come back and save you, or is outside of you to save you. I think that is, yes, education, yes, and health, it's so prevalent in most of our systems. I think that we're remiss to leave out religious entities and beliefs, because it's heavily ingrained in there as well. There are very few religious practices that are teaching us to go within and find our connection to source. And I'm going to call it quits there.
And I love that, because that really, it broadens it to the biggest possible level, right? Like it starts out very small, but it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So you can really go down a lot of different rabbit holes. And most people have had exposure to some sort of religious training, indoctrination, however you want to think about it. That's a really interesting thing, right? So you don't have the key, but somehow they do, or they have it. And if you follow them, you know, you might get some too.
Yeah. And I think it also makes the case for the importance of mind, body, spirit, right? That it's not just one element. It's not just our physical health, the body level that creates a victimization pattern. It's not just mental health that creates this victimization pattern. It's not just spiritual. It's all of it. It's all of it. So we have to also take a mind, body, spirit approach to transcend it, to heal it, to step out of it, to rewrite that story. We, as I like to say, can leave no part behind. So I would love for you to share with our audience the practical tips. What practical tips do you have, or would you share with listeners to begin them on this path to transform the victim mindset into that of a victor mindset?
We should be always trying to move into an observer consciousness about ourselves, right? Like, what am I bringing to the table here? What if this criticism of me, or this criticism that I'm afraid other people are thinking of me, what if it's true? What if it's right? And what am I making that mean? Right. So, I mean, you can take any number of, like, you know, any number of stereotypes and apply that to it. What if I'm using control and manipulation to get my own basic needs met? Right. How am I sort of playing the game? I feel like that's the most important part of this, right, is to be observing your own behavior. And just kind of gently, you know, asking these questions in my mind, like I'm imagining that other people are thinking this. Definitely don't know what they're thinking, but I definitely know, since I'm imagining they think it, I must be thinking it. What if it's true? What if all these horrible things about me are true? And if they're true, what do I imagine that to mean, right? How do I use that information to segregate myself, or to justify the position that I've been living in, right? Like, you know, whether it's, you know, the continuation of my depression, my anxiety, my, you know, lack of success, my lack of motivation. How can I begin to see this from a different point of view? How can I begin to notice, like, where I'm feeling, or where I'm expressing ideas of powerlessness or worthlessness or helplessness, and I'm acting as though those things are really true, right? Because it really is starting from the inside and then branching out. And I think a lot of times you need someone, doesn't have to be a therapist, a lot of times it is, but it doesn't have to be, but you need someone to sort of hold that space for that kind of deep exploration, because it's not the way we're trained, right? We're trained from childhood to listen to other people, parrot back to them what they tell us to say. And if that's, you know, if that's always been the case, right? Say that you're unworthy, say that you don't deserve this. Well, how could you possibly deserve this? Why would you think that you could deserve it? It wouldn't make any sense, right? It's not your worldview. So to hold a different worldview, or to begin to bring in a different worldview, really takes practice and attention, right? So we're always sort of trying to sniff out where our inner victim lies.
So there's a couple things I hear you saying in this is, in order to be in that role of observer and being curious with ourselves, we're going to have to create some time and space to be with ourselves. There's the busy rat race lifestyle is not conducive to us stopping and holding a thought process or thought thread of inquiry with ourselves. And so sometimes that requires blocking out time on your planner. If you're a to-do lister, maybe it goes on your to-do list. Maybe it doesn't happen in the moment where you're spun out or you're, you know, nose deep in being the victim, but perhaps it's just taking some time to sit with yourself so that you can be reflective and ask yourself some questions and reflect on a recent situation and then go down that trail of thought that Tracy prompted in being curious and being an observer. Now, for those who, you know, I feel like there's always two sides of the spectrums with clients. There are the clients who will create the space and be reflective on their own, not so much in the moment. And then there's the clients who are most uncomfortable in the moment, and they want it all to go away in the moment. And so then they're so uncomfortable in the moment, they're like, okay, I got to figure it out, and I've got to see the things, and I have to move into observer right now. And it's really hard to be an observer when our nervous system is so flared, when we're in that emotional cyclone or tornado, as I like to refer to it as. So what would you suggest for people who are in the midst of a trigger, or what I prefer to call an activation? We get very activated to find a solution. But for people who are very much in the trigger or the activation with what they'll come to know as they come to know themselves, that being their nervous system being in a very heightened state, fight, flight, freeze, what's the first step that you would suggest for them to bring themselves centered so they can observe?
God, I mean, there's so much here, right? Because most people don't realize when they're activated, or they realize that they're activated, but they don't realize why, right? And I want to make the point, because I think you make the point very well, that a lot of people can't sit in the silence. They can't sit. It doesn't even have to be uncomfortable. It doesn't have to be a trigger, an outside trigger that activates their nervous system. It's just the silence of sitting with themselves that starts to cause anxiety, right? And like, so as whatever they're trying to repress begins to try to bubble up through the surface, they find themselves becoming more and more activated. And that's hard to sit with. And so people distract, right? So maybe the first thing is noticing when you have the urge to distract, noticing when you want to turn on music, or you're going on your phone, or you want to take a snack that you're not really hungry for. Like, it doesn't really matter, right? It doesn't matter what the behavior is. What you're noticing is that, like, something feels uncomfortable right now. Like, there's something going on. I don't even know what it is, but I have, like, a desire to get away from it. That's the first sign, because it's hard enough, I think, to teach people or to help people develop a practice of like meditation, right, which would help. People are so afraid of the silence that, I mean, I I heard a client say the other day that they lost their phone, dropped their phone in the shower. I was like, why was your phone in the shower? They don't want to be alone in the shower, right? Like, wow, that's a lot, right? So there's no space for self-reflection. And I think that's something we're really missing as a society is like, you know, any opportunity to self-reflect, because how do you get to know these parts of yourself if you're always shutting them up, right? And so these aren't, in a lot of cases, I feel like deeply buried parts of ourselves that are holding on to these belief systems and these coping techniques, and they're not working, right? But we're not acquainted with those parts of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. Every single one of those coping mechanisms you just mentioned, I go through every time I sit down to write the blog, our story, et cetera. And even though I'm still using mindset tools and emotional processing tools, it speaks to that bubbling up process that you talked about. It's very real and it's layer after layer. And that's why coming to a place of empowerment, of being equipped with the tools that are going to keep you comfortable in your, like we can be both. We can be uncomfortable and uncomfortable at the same time. We can know that uncomfortable space holds potential opportunity for us to grow and something really good is on the other side of it. We just have to have the tools to work through that and get there. And so this is not saying, oh, hey, there's a place, there's an end line to this race. There's a place where you've made it. It's a continual process. And I feel like when you brought up this topic to discuss, I was so pumped to talk about it. And I feel like one of the biggest messages within this conversation is to understand that this really is an ongoing process for all of us. No matter how accomplished we are in our personal journey, no matter how enlightened one might be, like this is part of the art of being human. We work through these same processes over and over and over to go to the next level and the next level and the next level. And the more that we go through that process, it's like going to the gym and flexing your muscle. It does get easier. It gets easier to sit in that space and observe, hey, I'm uncomfortable. I don't need my phone to numb it. I have a path through it. Hey, I am uncomfortable. I don't need to eat because I have a path through it. So it's so beautiful and eloquent to bring all of that up because it's so spot on to what, you know, being activated and being human and working through the process is truly all about. And there's also something to be said for knowing that the noise in our head or the voices in our head, like we actually have the ability to program our brain for that voice to say something different. But we first have to listen to what the voice is telling us in the first place. So listen to those parts of ourselves that are holding some hurt or pain or wisdom, actually usually it's all of it, and to be able to transmute it and change it, if you will. So as we move toward the top of the hour, I would love for you to share with the audience, what's the biggest thing that's affected your life that once you could see it, you couldn't unsee it?
My gosh, that is a really good and sort of, wow, deep question.
Yeah, as you take pause with that, I'm just going to bring this full circle in this conversation too, where we talk about the seen and the unseen here. Mental health is such an unseen aspect of ourselves. The victimization is such an unseen, even spiritual aspect of ourselves that we've talked about earlier, but we see it play out in the physical, of course, in our behaviors, in the thought processes that lead to the responses and reactions we take. And this is why we talk about all of the aspects of being human, because they're all connected. And it's not just seeing sitting on a table or a lamp sitting in the corner, and the only thing that's real are the things that we physically can touch and hold and feel. We are much more multifaceted than that. So yeah, if there's anything that comes to mind that has been most profound for you, that like the veil's lifted and you see something from a different paradigm or perspective, and then you just couldn't unsee it.
Oh God. I mean, yeah. I remember saying to my analyst when I was kind of in the middle of it, and it was just kind of during the middle of an incredibly painful transformative process. And I remember saying, God, I wish I never started any of this. Like, I wish that I could just go back to normal when I didn't realize, when I didn't care, when I didn't, you know, have any of these opinions that I have now. And I think that's the thing that people are most afraid of when they start treatment or when they try to do something new, is like, what am I going to learn that I can't unlearn? And I think that thing is yourself, right? It's like learning things about yourself and putting pieces together that now you have to make space for that new person that you're becoming all the time. And so it's like not one thing. It's everything. It's your continued desire to grow as a person and to own yourself, like, right, your own self-sovereignty. Your own self-sovereignty kind of comes with this new knowledge that you can never unsee. And so it's not one thing that I can say, oh, like when you learn this, you'll never go back. It's different for everyone. I guess the one thing I want to leave people with is that it's so worth it, right? Because like you sort of behind, like you shed part of that old person that you used to be. And it feels in the moment like you're going to die without that part of you. And then, you know, you get further along your journey and not only haven't you died, but you've reaped the benefits of learning so much more and having so much more access to your own emotional content and growth that you forget all about it. It's like, you know, it's like letting go of something that it doesn't matter anymore. So that's like kind of the hard part of the journey, but I think it does get better.
I love that. Yeah, I think that someone's list to this question could be infinitely long. It would probably make an amazing journal prompt, honestly, to see the areas where we do grow, because it too is an ongoing process of being human. So please share with our listeners, where can they connect with you? I know you're on Instagram, but where else, and what is your Instagram handle, and where else can they find more about you?
Okay, so you can find me on my website at tracycardello.com. You can also find me at Tracy Cardello on Instagram. I'm also on Facebook, and I think that's also Tracy Cardello. Yeah, so those are the places to find me. I have a blog on that site, and I try to update my social media pretty periodically.
And Tracy has some courses, and of course she works one-on-one with people, so there's lots of options of how to get plugged in into her world, and it is well worth it. Also, as we move to the top of the hour, I just want to share with the audience a couple of ways or opportunities to get into my world. We have an Enneagram workshop happening tomorrow at 4 p.m. Pacific time, 6 p.m. Central time. We're going to talk about the arrows of the Enneagram, so not something we've gotten into here live on air yet. It's completely free, and it's masterful. Seriously, there was a little girl at the air show. SJ and I were watching the air show together this weekend with the Blue Angels flying. It was incredible. This little girl had an umbrella, and she was very expressive with herself and her little umbrella, and she kept hitting SJ. And SJ could tell she was an Enneagram 4, and she simply turned around and said, hey, I know you're really special and you're really unique, and I totally see you. You're darling. But I have an expectation that that umbrella is not going to hit me again. And it didn't. And this is the power of the Enneagram, right? Like, we can speak to the motivators within people. As parents, wouldn't you love to have the keys to the language that's going to motivate your children to make life harmonious and simple? Jump into this masterclass. You will find the keys. On my website, www.fiercelyradiantsoul.com, you can click on the Eyes Wide Open page, and you'll find the link to grab your free seat at that masterclass there. And as we wrap up August, I have been doing an August inspiration through the app Voxer. You get a daily audio clip, journal prompt, meditation, whatever comes through for the day. And it has been completely focused on coming home to yourself, loving yourself, coming home to your heart, your desires. The feedback has been phenomenal. At the end of the month, I am going to transition this to a different platform, and the price is going to go up at that time. This will be the best $44 you will ever spend on personal development, I assure you. So if you want to get in on that before the price goes up, you can simply shoot me a message, Facebook, Instagram, or to email fiercelyradiantsoul@yahoo.com. Send me your Voxer handle. I'll send you a pay link. It's easy peasy, and you'll be in on it. So I think that's everything. I feel like that's a lot. But thank you, Tracy, so much for being here. Thank you for sharing this conversation and your wisdom with all.
Thank you so much for everything. It was so good talking to you.
I love talking to you every time we connect. It makes my day. So I hope everyone else feels that way in getting to share in this conversation with us. Next week, I'll be back here solo on my own. We're going to continue our discussion of the laws of the universe, and my aspiration is to bring that to a close. So join me back here, because that also makes life so much easier, working with a belief system that serves us and brings abundance into our lives. Yes, more of that, please. So until then, friends, keep your eyes wide open.
This is Nicole Whitney. Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.